This is Jason Kurtman with Concealed Advantage Online Training, and now we're going to go over the fundamentals and safety class. As you see to the left, there's the presentation, the slide presentation, and as we go along, you can click on each slide to proceed to the next slide. So go ahead and do that now. The goal of this course is to teach the basic knowledge, skills, and attitudes necessary for owning and using a pistol. It's a basic course, and of course you'll need and want to practice and seek more advanced training. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. Somebody gave me this a couple of years ago. It says, why carry a gun? Because a whole cop would be too heavy, and that is very true. You can look it up. The Supreme Court ruled back in the early 80s that law enforcement agencies do not have an obligation, a legal obligation, to protect an individual. That came about because of a long court case, and we won't go into that here. That might be for a future course. You've got to take responsibility for your own safety in your home and when you're out and about with your loved ones and your family. And of course, that's why people get the concealed carry permits, because they do have to take responsibility. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. The portion of this class will involve pistol knowledge and safe gun handling. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now you'll see here on this picture, it says somebody engraved on this revolver, warning, bullets come out of this end. This slide is in my regular concealed carry class, and I put that there because as we pass guns around the classroom to look at them and examine them and see how they work, I always tell people, don't point that gun at anybody. And I use this as a demonstration. The bullets come out of this end. And when you sweep a gun across an area and it intersects with the presence of somebody else, we call that lasering. And you do not want to laser an individual. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. What is a pistol? Well, there's many state laws that define what a pistol or a handgun is. For example, Missouri statutes, which I'm the most familiar with, define a concealable handgun as one having a barrel length less than 16 inches. Proceed to the next slide. The fundamental gun safety rules are always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction, always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot, always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it, and do not point a gun at anything you're not willing to kill or destroy. Proceed to the next slide. Any gun, anytime when it is passed to another person, should be in a safe condition. A safe condition means that it's unloaded and made safe with the magazine out and the slide locked back on a semi-automatic, or on a revolver, the cylinder open. Both the passer and receiver will verify the gun is unloaded and in a safe condition. Proceed to the next slide. A firearm is a weapon, it's not a tool. The picture you see here is of a gentleman who decided to use the butt of his pistol to knock loose the lug nuts on his tire. You don't want to do that. I told my students in the classes before, too. You see in these old westerns the sheriff hanging up a wanted poster using the butt of his pistol. Friends, in real life, I don't think they actually did that. Lawmen, anybody who carried a gun knew that their life could depend upon that tool, that pistol, whether it be a rattlesnake or a mean old hombre. They needed that pistol, and they would not treat those pistols in such a fashion. And neither should you, as a result here of what you can see can happen. So go ahead and go on to the next slide. We're going to talk about pistol knowledge and safe gun handling. We'll cover throughout this course revolver knowledge, semi-automatic pistol knowledge, operating revolvers and semi-automatic pistols, and safe gun handling. We'll talk a little bit more about that in some upcoming videos, too. Proceed to the next slide. A revolver is a pistol that has a rotating cylinder containing a number of firing chambers. The action of the trigger or hammer will line up a chamber with the barrel and the firing pin. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now, a revolver consists of basically three major components: the frame, the barrel, and the action. Proceed to the next slide. The backbone to which all the other parts are attached consists of the grip panels, the trigger guard, the rear sight, and the back strap. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. The barrel is basically a metal tube through which the bullet passes through. It consists of the bore, which is basically defined by size or caliber, rifling, That's the internal grooves of the barrel that you can see in this picture. The muzzle, that's the business end of the barrel. And the front sight, which is the most important element of a sight picture, which we'll get into that later. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. The action of a revolver. The action is a group of moving parts used to load, fire, and unload a pistol. They consist of the trigger, the hammer, the cylinder release latch, the ejector rod, and on some pistols, such as the new Tauruses, an integral safety lock on some of them. Proceed to the next slide. Here you see a picture of a revolver with all its parts listed. You can see that it's a very complex piece of machinery, but yet it is still very, very easy to use. Proceed to the next slide. The difference between a single action and a double action revolver. On a single action revolver, the trigger performs basically one action, and that's releasing the hammer. The hammer must be manually cocked with the thumb. It's noted here to discuss the trigger pull. A single action pistol has a very light trigger pull. The double action revolver, the trigger performs two actions. It both cocks and releases the hammer. Most double action revolvers can also be fired in single action mode by cocking the hammer with the thumb. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Here's an example of some single action revolvers. These are the old cowboy style pistols. Fun to shoot, very fun to shoot. Very time consuming to load and reload, but they are fun to shoot. Not very practical for concealed carry purposes, although some people prefer that. I don't recommend it. Proceed to the next slide. Here's an example of your double action revolvers. Now, on a double action revolver, you can load all the rounds pretty much at the same time versus one at a time in a single action revolver. Your cylinder swings out, and the double action revolver does not necessarily have to be cocked. It can be, depending on the type of model that you have. Proceed to the next slide. The semi-automatic fires a single cartridge each time the trigger is pulled, automatically extracts and ejects the empty case, and inserts a new cartridge into the chamber. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. The semi-automatic, like the revolver, consists of three major components: the frame, the barrel, and the action. Proceed to the next slide. The frame consists of the grip panels, the trigger guard, the rear sight, the back strap, safety on some, the slide stop release lever, the decocker on some, such as some of your 1911 and Ruger type models, and the loaded chamber indicator on some. Proceed to the next slide. Again, you have a barrel in a semi-automatic, and it has a bore, which is defined by caliber or size. As you can see in the picture here, it also has rifling. There's only one chamber in the barrel of a semi-automatic. Has the muzzle and the front sight. Proceed to the next slide. The action consists of the trigger, the hammer, or the striker. Hammer would be some of your older model Rugers like that, and the hammer that comes back. The Walther P-22 has a hammer. Or the striker, like the Glock and the Ruger SR series. The slide, the magazine release button, and some have the integral safety locking device. Proceed to the next slide. There's three types of semi-automatic actions. There's the single action, like your 1911, your double action, much like a Walther P-22, and a double action only, which would be considered something like your Glock or your Ruger SR9 series. The double action only is considered by legal experts as having the least liability. Glock safe action is considered a double action only. Proceed to the next slide. Here you have a diagram of the different parts of a semi-automatic. Again, you can see it's very complex in assembly, very easy to operate, just a little bit more difficult than the revolver, but not much. Proceed to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about safe gun handling. There's only two major causes of gun accidents, and that's ignorance, which is a lack of knowledge. An individual may not know how to properly operate a pistol. That can also fall in with some terminology when you're talking about gun knowledge. Carelessness. Firearms accident can occur when a person is careless around firearms. A person handling a gun may know the various gun safety rules, but neglects to apply them. Now, I've got to interject a personal story here. Some years back, when I was a young police chief, I hired a new recruit. He came into the office, and he'd fallen on hard times and had to sell his semi-automatic pistol. And he asked me if the department had one that they could issue him for the evening. I said, yes, we do. We have a Glock 40 caliber, model 22, in the lower drawer of the desk. And I reached down, unlocked the drawer, pulled it out, and this young officer had 17 years of experience. He wasn't all that young, but he was still young. And because of that, I assumed that he was familiar with firearms, firearm safety, and firearms terminology. So I didn't see any reason to remove the magazine. I didn't see any reason to lock the slide back, because I knew that there was not one in the chamber. So I just handed him the pistol butt forward and said, there's not one in the chamber. He took the gun, and while I was fishing in the drawer for the extra two spare magazines, I heard the slide rack back, and my first thought was, he's putting one in the chamber, he's going to holster it, he's ready for the night, everything's okay. But I did not have time to process that complete thought. Before I was able to do so, a shot rang out. The bullet missed my head just by an inch or two, went into the floor right in front of my face, because I was leaned over and trying to fish out the two magazines next to the floor in that drawer. It hit the floor, shattered, came back up, and swept the left side of my face. I began bleeding profusely. Fortunately, no fragments penetrated any further than my skin. I was very, very fortunate. But that accident happened, ignorance on his part, because he just didn't know the difference between there's not one in the chamber and the gun's not loaded. His first thought was that I told him that the gun wasn't loaded. But 99% of that accident happened because of carelessness. I got complacent. I assumed that he would understand the terminology and know what I meant. It was my fault. Proceed to the next slide. This is a picture of the bullet that actually swept the left side of my face, and three fragments of it there on the left. The only three fragments that we were able to find, as a matter of fact. Proceed to the next slide. This is the hole in the floor. It was a linoleum tiled floor with a concrete base. And as you can see there, it penetrated a good, probably a quarter of an inch to a little bit more into the floor. I was very fortunate again. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Fundamental gun safety rules, again, are always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it. And do not point a gun at anything you are not willing to kill or destroy. Now, these rules are made so that if you fail to keep one, the other three will keep you in a safe environment. For example, if you don't keep the gun pointed in a safe direction, and the other three, it won't fire. But let's say you do accidentally fire it. You do not, the gun is loaded, you're ready to use it, but you don't point it at anything that you're not willing to kill or destroy. You're mindful of your back stops, and you disengage or you engage the trigger, the gun fires. Well, the gun's pointed in a safe direction. So you're going to have an accidental discharge, but you follow the other rules, and they're going to make sure, following those other rules, that nobody's going to get hurt or injured. You might destroy some property, but again, the gun is in a safe direction. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. Your handgun will always be a weapon of last resort, a weapon you will avoid using unless you have absolutely no other options to safely stop an attack. A gun stoppage that occurs during a violent encounter could render you helpless to stop an assailant's attack. For this reason, you must learn immediate action drills for quickly clearing the stoppages. Due to the short duration of this class, we're only going to cover the basic immediate action drills. It is highly recommended you take some more advanced training where you can actually put these things into practice and learn some other techniques. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Now, a failure to fire with a revolver occurs whenever the hammer falls on a loaded chamber or one believed to be loaded and the gun does not fire. The rounds may already be fired, the chamber may actually be empty, or you may have a mechanical or ammunition failure. The immediate action drill is to fire a second time. If this does not fix the problem, your only course of action is to attempt to reload. If it is a mechanical malfunction, this will not fix the problem and the services of a gunsmith may be required. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now, there's several different types of semi-automatic stoppages. We're going to talk about these. All of these are related to or basically revolve around these types: fire, feed, extraction, ejection, going into battery, or an empty chamber. Now, let's talk about fire. That's basically bad ammunition. Feed. The magazine's not seated right in the magazine well. The extraction. Something happened. An extractor pin broke. It didn't quite grab the shell. It didn't extract the empty shell. The ejection. Might eject it, but it might not have enough pressure to kick it completely out to clear the area, and you get a stovepipe. Going into battery. This can happen with a dirty gun or some bad ammunition that causes a fragment of your shell casing to break off and become lodged inside the sliding mechanism of your pistol, where the gun does not come back fully into battery. We might talk about this a little later on in one of the videos. Or an empty chamber. Basically, what that means is that your gun's empty. It's unloaded. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now, most stoppages that may occur to a semi-automatic pistol can be cleared by one basic immediate action drill, and that's the tap, roll, and rack. Remove your finger from the trigger and point the gun in a safe direction. Tap the base of the magazine to ensure it's fully seated. Give it a good solid tap, not one of these light kitty taps. Slam that thing in there. Make sure it's home. Invert or roll the gun toward your non-gun hand if it's an open top ejection port, or to the side with the ejection port if not. This will allow a cleared round to escape during the next action. Rack the slide vigorously to the rear and let it go forward without riding the slide. Come back up to the ready position, assess the situation to determine if the target still presents a threat, and take appropriate action. This drill will clear most stoppages. However, as we said before, there are other techniques for clearing other less common stoppages that you should learn. This is a good reason to take a more advanced protection class. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. A double feed. Tap, roll, and rack will not correct a double feed. To correct a double feed, you'll need to remove the magazine. This may be difficult. Roll the gun to the side with the port. Rack the slide to remove the rounds. Use a new magazine or the removed one after you have corrected the top round position. Insert the magazine and rack the slide to chamber a new round. Proceed to the next slide. Again, the semi-automatic immediate action drill. Tap it firmly. Slap it, is what I call it. Rack the slide, roll it over and rack the slide, and then come back up to the ready position. Go ahead and go to the next slide. I want you to understand that stoppages are not common, but they can and do happen on a rare occasion. And if they should happen during a violent encounter, you want to be trained for these malfunctions so they won't hinder you in a lethal situation. Go to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about ammunition knowledge. This is pretty basic, pretty elementary. Proceed to the next slide. We're going to learn about the components of a pistol cartridge, the firing sequence of a cartridge, how to properly store ammunition, the major types of cartridge malfunctions, and target ammo versus carry ammo. Go to the next slide. The four components of a pistol cartridge are the case, the primer, the powder charge, and the bullet. Now, the case is the metal cylinder that is closed at one end and contains the other three components. The primer is an impact-sensitive chemical compound used for ignition. I like to liken the primer to these little popper fireworks my son gets every 4th of July. You know the kind that are small, wrapped in paper, throws them on the sidewalk and they pop. That's kind of like a primer. The powder charge, it's a fast-burning chemical compound used as a propellant. And of course, the bullet is the projectile. Go to the next slide. Two types of cartridges, the rim fire and the center cartridges. The rim fire cartridge, the primer is contained inside the rim of the case's base. The center fire cartridge, the primer is contained in a small metal cup and is in the center of the case's base. Now, right now, there's only two types of rim fires that I know of, and that's usually the .22 caliber that comes in long rifle or short or magnum, and of course, then there's the .17. But at the turn of the last century, they were experimenting with rimfire and centerfires in all sorts of different calibers. In my personal collection, I have a 32 caliber Hopkins and Allen bang-up model number 2, made in 1880, and it is a 32 caliber rimfire. They don't make ammunition for it anymore. I wouldn't want to shoot it anyway. Go on to the next slide. The cartridge firing sequence. The firing pin strikes and ignites the primer. The flame generated by the primer ignites the powder charge, and the powder burns very rapidly and produces a high volume of gas, and the gas, of course, propels the bullet out of the barrel at an extremely high rate of speed. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Always be sure to load the proper cartridge into the pistol. Match the cartridge designation stamped on the pistol with the cartridge designation printed on the ammunition box and on the bottom of a centerfire cartridge. Plus P cartridges are loaded to higher pressures than standard cartridges, and plus P plus cartridges are loaded to higher pressures than plus P cartridges. Shooters must make sure their pistol is approved for plus P cartridges. Now, up until just a couple of years ago, I assumed that all modern 38 caliber revolvers, all modern ones, ones that were recently made, were rated for plus P cartridges. I found out this was not the case when a student came to my class and had a brand new Charter Arms Bulldog, and I believe that was model was a Charter Arms 38 caliber, and the individual that had sold this pistol to her had also sold her several boxes of plus P cartridge. And she asked me, will this be okay? Will this work? I said, oh yeah, it's not a problem. All modern revolvers, 38s, are rated for plus P. During the course of the class, we took a break. She went to the restroom, and I was looking through the manual, and I noticed that on the front or second page, it said, warning, do not fire plus P cartridges out of this revolver. This revolver is not rated for plus P ammunition. So you need to make sure, double check with your weapons, if you carry revolvers or whatever kind of firearm, make sure that your ammunition is rated for that particular type of firearm. Proceed to the next slide. Ammunition is usually defined by the bullet size or the caliber. 25 caliber is, of course, about a quarter of an inch. A 40 caliber is 4/10 of an inch. And a 50 caliber is 0.50 of an inch or a half an inch. And, of course, then we have the wonderful European system, the millimeter. The 9 millimeter is approximately 0.35 of an inch. And bullet weight is measured in grains. 436.5 grains equals 1 ounce. Keep in mind, too, that the 10 millimeter is approximately the same size as a 40 caliber. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. As you see here, there's all different types of ammunition. Wad cutters, semi-wad cutters, and round nose. For target, the wad cutter or the semi-wad cutter or the semi-wad cutter or the round nose, they're all good for target practice. There are other types of ammunition, snake shot, which is good basically for just what it sounds. So those are the types of ammunition, and generally those are the kind that are good for target practice. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Okay, now we have the full metal jacket. The entire bullet is covered by a copper jacket. Semi-jacketed, copper jacket is partially covering the bullet. And the hollow point, a bullet with a hole in the nose of the bullet. This is designed to expand upon impact and cause more tissue damage. It's also designed generally so it will not penetrate the body of someone that you've had to shoot with it. You don't want it going through somebody and into somebody else. The hollow point is basically the only type of ammunition that you want to carry for self-defense purposes. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now, we've all seen in the movies and television people showing people getting shot and getting knocked through the air and thrown backwards 20 feet or more. Of course, we know that this is just in the movies. Reality demonstrates that a person may not even know he's been shot and will continue the fight until dysfunction occurs. Proceed to the next slide. Storing your ammunition. Store it in a cool and dry area. Avoid humidity. Avoid storing it in extremely high temperature areas like the attic or the trunk of the car. Now, I will venture to say that there's a lot of police cars out there that have had ammunition in them for well over a year. Some of them might even have it in there for 3 to 5 years. Don't recommend that. Always keep your ammunition in a factory box or carton, especially your carry ammo. And I'll tell you why. If you get involved in a shooting, you're going to want to make sure that your attorney has access to that ammunition so that they can duplicate a forensic situation if necessary. That's done for legal matters. Wipe your fingerprints off the cartridges. Perspiration may cause corrosion. Now, a couple of years ago, I said, now, if your perspiration is causing corrosion, you're not doing enough shooting because you want to rotate that ammunition out. But there was a time when the ammunition was hard to get a hold of, especially 9mm, 40 caliber, 45. And so I kind of held true to that. But now I would venture to say you need to rotate your ammunition out as much as possible, at least every 6 months. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Ammunition should always be stored where children and other unauthorized persons will not have access to it. It should not be exposed to solvents, petroleum products, bore cleaners, ammonia, or any other chemicals. They can cause the primer and the powder to charge to deteriorate, resulting in a cartridge malfunction. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. There's three types of cartridge malfunctions: the misfire, the hang fire, and the squib load. Basically, the misfire generally is bad ammunition, a failure of the cartridge to fire after the primer has been struck by the firing pin. A hang fire is a perceptible delay in the ignition of a cartridge after the primer has been struck by the firing pin. If it does fail to fire immediately, you'll not know if it's a misfire or a hang fire. Keep the pistol pointed in a safe direction. Wait 30 seconds, maybe even 60 seconds, before opening the action to remove the cartridge. A squib load, something totally different. The squib load is a development of less than normal pressure or velocity after the ignition of a cartridge. If anything unusual is noticed when firing a shot, such as a difference in recoil or noise, the shooter should stop firing immediately. Keep the muzzle pointed in a safe direction and unload the pistol. Check to be sure that the chambers are empty. Then, with the action open, visually inspect the barrel to be sure that it's not obstructed by a bullet. Squib loads can result in a bullet failing to exit the barrel. If a bullet is lodged in the barrel, the firing of another shot could cause serious damage or injury. Case in point, the actor Brandon Lee, the son of Bruce Lee, was killed by a squib load. The stunt coordinator fired some live ammunition the day before to get some empty casings and to make some blanks. The last shot he fired was a squib load, and the bullet from that casing got lodged in the barrel. Stunt coordinator made his blanks, loaded them into the gun the next day. The first blank was fired, which removed the squib load from the barrel, and the squib load went into Mr. Brandon Lee, and he was killed. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here's a picture of what can happen with different types of squib loads and other types of malfunctions. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Well, what kind of ammo are you going to use? Well, for practice, any kind of cheap ammo is okay. Some people like this Wolf ammunition. I really don't care for it. I've used it a couple of times and haven't found it to be too dependable. But if you're going to just use it for practice, that's fine. For carry, you want to use a quality factory ammo that'll normally, and I should say always, be of a hollow point design. Again, you want to change out your carry ammo at least every 6 months. Never, never, never use reloads for your carry ammo. Especially, you know, you don't want to carry definitely anything that you've done yourself. This will look bad to a jury if you've had to use your own ammo in a lethal situation. A jury may be presented with the idea that you were brewing up your special little death round. Exotic ammo will cause legal problems if used. Worst case scenario, if you use federal or Winchester ammunition, something that's American made, and your attorney wants to subpoena, or the other attorney wants to subpoena somebody off the assembly line that worked that day and worked with that lot of ammunition, if they get them in, they speak English, right? Well, if you use Wolf ammunition, they're not going to get somebody to come in from Siberia, and if they are lucky to, well, you're going to have to get a translator, somebody that can speak Russian. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Well, now we're going to talk about the fundamentals of pistol shooting. Proceed to the next slide. Let's talk about your dominant eye. You see the little red dot on your screen? Stand back and make a little triangle with your hand like it's seen in the picture there at the left. Stand back a couple of feet and look at that red dot through your pyramid, your triangle, through your hand. Now look at it with both eyes open. Close your right eye. If you still see it, your left eye dominant. Now keep both eyes open again. Close your left eye. If you still see it, your right eye dominant. That's pretty much how to tell which eye is dominant. Another thing you can do is bring that hand back to whichever eye your hand lands on without that red dot going out of frame. Whichever eye you land on, that's your dominant eye. Proceed to the next screen. These are your fundamentals of pistol shooting. Your position. Basically, that means your stance. Then your grip, your breath control, your sight alignment, your trigger squeeze, and your follow-through. And your follow-through is nothing more than going through the whole cycle again. Proceed to the next slide. Let's talk about the positions. There's two basic positions that we teach, and one is the isosceles, and the other is the Weaver standing position. These are the only two we're going to talk about right now, and again, we may demonstrate those in a video later on throughout this course. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here you see a good solid grip on the semi-automatic. Notice in the upper left-hand corner, the individual has his finger off the trigger, has it along the slide, usually it rests in a little divot point. We call that indexing, or the index point. Keep that finger off the slide until you are off the trigger until you're ready to fire. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Here's a good example of the grip and how it is maintained, how it is acquired and maintained. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Breath control. In order to minimize body movement, your breath must be held while firing a shot. Before each shot, take a deep breath, let enough air out so you're comfortable and hold the remaining breath while firing the shot. If your breath is held too long, muscle tremors may start, usually after approximately 8 seconds, but varies from person to person. Point the gun in a safe direction, take your finger off the trigger, put the gun down and relax. Take a few breaths and then begin the firing cycle again. Of course, in real life shooting, especially in a life-threatening situation, this wouldn't be applicable, but for practice, it is. Go on to the next slide. Sight alignment. Proper sight alignment. The top of the front sight is even with the top of the rear sight, and there are equal amounts of space separating the front sight from the sides of the rear sight. The eye can only focus on one object at a time. It cannot keep the rear sight, the front sight, and the target in focus simultaneously. The shooter must concentrate on the front sight. The bullet does follow the front sight. The front sight should appear sharp and clear. The rear sight should appear less clear, and the target should appear blurred. Your sight picture is obtained by achieving the proper sight alignment and putting the aligned sights into proper relationship with the target. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here you see a couple of pictures demonstrating your sight picture. Go ahead and go to the next slide. And here's three more. My favorite is this one on the top left corner. You can see, even without the target there, that front sight is completely in focus. Over to the right, it's another good example. Of course, this is a drawing, a graphic, but it shows how the rear sights are blurred, the target's blurred, but that front sight is sharp and clear. Go ahead and go to the next slide. No shooter can hold the pistol in a firing position without some motion. This motion is called the arc of movement. The shooter should try to maintain a proper sight alignment while maintaining a minimum arc of movement. Proper sight alignment is the key to accurate shooting. Any alignment or misalignment of the front sight with the rear introduces what's called an angular error. Now, this is multiplied with distance. Basically, you're off 1 inch at the end of your barrel. Downrange, you might be off a whole foot or 3 feet, depending on how far you are from your target. Ideally, it is best to keep both eyes open while aiming. More total light is available to the eyes, and depth perception is better under a high-stress situation where you develop tunnel syndrome or tunnel vision. If you have both eyes open, it's a little bit more advantageous in a circumstance like that. Go ahead and go to your next slide. The index finger is placed so that the trigger is halfway between the tip of the finger and the first joint. The trigger is squeezed straight to the rear in a smooth, continuous manner without disturbing sight alignment. Don't speed up or slow down the pressure or apply it in a start and stop manner. You should not be able to predict the instant that the gun will fire. Each shot should come as a complete surprise. Trigger squeeze and sight alignment must be done simultaneously while maintaining a minimum arc of movement. Go ahead and go to your next slide. Follow through, as we mentioned before. Follow through is continuing to do everything that was being done at the time the first shot was fired. Follow through prevents any unnecessary movement before the bullet exits the barrel. But remember, the two most important fundamentals in pistol shooting are sight alignment and trigger squeeze. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about the Weaver stance, the ready positions, and defensive accuracy and aiming. And we're really going to talk about this in some more of the other videos, so we'll briefly touch on it here. Your Weaver shooting position. Practice getting into the proper position first without a pistol, and next with one, checking for the following. Proper grip, which is wrapped or cupped. Your feet bladed to the target in a boxer stance with your non-gun foot forward. Your body weight carried slightly forward on the balls of your feet. Your legs, knees slightly bent. Your back should be comfortable and balanced with a forward bend so to absorb recoil. Your arm should be in an isometric contraction, pushing with the gun arm and pulling with the weak arm, with both elbows bent and unlocked, the non-gun elbow pointing downward to bring the gun in close to the body. And your pistol should be brought to eye level. You may need to tilt your head properly to line up the sights. The shooter should be relaxed and comfortable, and again, we'll talk about this in a video later on. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here's an example to your left of the Weaver stance, and to the right of the arms and the elbows in position. Go ahead and go to your next slide. Talk about the Tueller drill. How long does it take to draw and fire two center mass hits? Well, how long does it take to cross 21 feet of distance? 21 feet is your danger zone. Sergeant Dennis Tueller, back years ago, was doing a study because of some police officers that had been killed, and when they arrived on scene, they found that most of the time, their revolvers were hanging out of their holster, and the officers had been stabbed. So he decided to do a study on this and find out that if an individual with a bladed weapon was attacking an officer, how much distance could be traversed before the officer was able to get his gun out of his holster. What they found out was that if an individual was 21 feet or closer to the officer under normal circumstances, and officers with normal training could not clear their holster and fire a shot at the individual if the individual started his attack from 21 feet away. Keep this in mind. If you are attacked and there's less than 21 feet from your attacker, what do you need to do? Well, number one, if you're outside of your own home, retreat completely if you can. If not, at least put some time and distance between your attacker and get to a tactical position. But 21 feet is your danger zone. Please keep that in mind. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about the ready positions. In many defensive situations, such as when you're listening for the approach of an intruder, you won't want to go into a firing position immediately. Often you'll want to hold your firearm in a ready position for an extended period of time in anticipation of its use. We'll learn two common ready positions right now. Go ahead and go to the next slide. As you can see here, this is called the low ready position. This is with the proper grip on your handgun, lowered it downward at an approximately 45 degree angle. The handgun will be pointed to the ground several feet in front of you. Go ahead and go to the next slide. This is called the retention ready position. This method places the handgun close to the body, promoting gun retention and hindering an attacker's ability to grab the gun. To assume this position, simply pull the handgun in close to the body, directly in front of the gun's side armpit. The two-handed grip is retained. You can use one hand if necessary, such as the officer in this picture. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Currently, the average response time for police in many parts of a metro area is between 8 and 18 minutes. You have to be able to deal with anything that can happen prior to your police arrival. Now, back in Missouri, I can tell you this, if you're not inside of city limits where they have 24-hour police coverage, you're depending upon a rural county sheriff's department, your wait time might be considerably longer especially if it's during the winter. Many, many times after 3 o'clock or even sometimes 1 or 2 o'clock, an officer is placed on call and there is nobody actively on the streets in the county. If he gets a call, let's say it's winter, he has to put all his gear back on, step out to his patrol car where there might, worst case scenario, be an inch of ice wrapping the car. He's got to get that ice off before he can safely move that vehicle down a gravel country road at 60 miles an hour. So keep that in mind. The response time of a police department may not be what we would all like it to be. That being in mind, you've got to be able to protect yourself and take care of yourself in a lethal force situation. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Now, there's two types of accuracy. There's defensive accuracy and there's target accuracy. Now, defensive accuracy is a very compressed version of target accuracy, but the fundamentals are the same. They're only compressed in time. Things you must do different to achieve defensive accuracy. First of all, expect larger groups. For self-defense purposes, shots covering a 9-inch piece of paper are acceptable. Balance your speed and accuracy. You need to fire as fast as you can and as accurately as you can. Proper trigger control is crucial to achieving this accuracy. Aim at the center of the exposed mass. Note that when you fire quickly, your hits will be spread out more from this aiming point because speedy shooting usually results in an imperfect alignment of the sights. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Defensive shooting. For defensive shooting, the handgun sights are often used in a different manner than what they are when you're target shooting. This is because the ranges at which defensive encounters occur are often very close. The degree to which you may deviate from perfect sight alignment depends basically upon target distance, target size, and the speed required to engage your target. When engaging a target at close range, a deviation in sight alignment is not as critical and may be needed to increase speed. We'll cover flash sight picture and point shooting next. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Flash sight picture, in this technique, the shot is fired as soon as the front sight is roughly lined up somewhere within the rear sight notch. Remember, the bullet follows the front sight. You can go ahead and go to the next slide. In point shooting, it's basically just what it sounds like. Sometimes an attack occurs so close and so fast that any reference to sight alignment becomes unnecessary and impossible. Point shooting is the technique used in such circumstances. This involves simply raising or extending the handgun from a ready position to your normal two-handed firing stance with the muzzle pointed to the center of the massive target and firing as soon as your arms are in the shooting position. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Train to live. Remember, all things being equal, action beats reaction. This does not justify brandishing a weapon. But if you're in a situation and you can slip your hand under your coat and get a good firm grip on that firearm, by all means, do so. Go ahead and go to your next slide. We must shoot until the threat is neutralized. Center mass hits result in the most effective stops. We don't shoot to kill. We shoot to stop the threat. Now, the next slide I'm going to show you has an individual who has been shot over 33 times with the 9mm. And as you can see, several of them are headshots. Go ahead and proceed to the next slide. You can go ahead and proceed to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about concealed carry consideration, safety, and stress response. Go ahead and move on to the next slide. As you can see in this picture, there are lots of different ways to carry concealed. Keep in mind that anything that is used to put a pistol in that is laid down, you are responsible for. If you lay it down and somebody picks it up, you're legally responsible for it. Heaven forbid should you ever set that weapon down and then somebody pick it up and it's used and somebody else is hurt. You don't want that to happen. For that reason, I recommend a good solid holster system, which would be either a fanny pack or an inside the belt holster. I prefer the inside the belts. I have used the fanny packs in the past. The main thing about the fanny pack holsters is they do scream gun, as well as some tactical vests that are used to conceal. But, you know, sometimes you can just tell if somebody's carrying by the types of clothing they're wearing. A couple of weeks ago, I was out near the end of Alamogordo, New Mexico, and I wear a belt that is a friction grip belt. It's nylon. I picked it up in a Guy's Big and Tall store in Cape Girardeau. And very nice belt. When you're built like a funnel, you want a belt that you can really cinch down. And I like this because it doesn't have the holes in it. You just cinch it down wherever you want it, and it's good to go. Well, I ran into an individual there. He saw the belt, and he said, "How do you like that belt?" I said, "I really, really like it. It's comfortable, and it grips down good and tight." He looked at me and winked and said, "Yeah, especially if you're carrying a gun." And I kind of laughed because I wasn't carrying a gun at the time, but that was one of the reasons why I purchased this belt. And he handed me his business card and asked me where I got my permit, if I had my permit. He was a concealed carry instructor. He knew the type of clothing as well. That just kind of gives people an indication if you're carrying a gun. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Carrying a concealed gun requires many serious considerations not required of an unarmed person. These involve safety as well as legal and accessibility considerations, some of which are: to be carried safely, a firearm must be secured from becoming separated from the shooter while carried. We talked about that a while ago. The type of holster or non-traditional carry device, such as a day planner or purse, is very important. Comfort versus ability to draw is a serious consideration. Holsters with means of retention, such as straps or other methods of securing them against unintentional loss of control, are preferred. Go ahead and go to the next slide. A person in possession of a concealed weapon is legally obligated to keep it under his or her control and inaccessible to unauthorized persons at all times. Some non-traditional carry methods, such as purses, day timers, fanny packs, etc., require that the person maintain control of them even when they're not in their hands. Leaving one unsecured on a desk or on the TV at home is not being in control of the gun. Now, this next phrase that I'm going to read to you is put in here by an associate of mine. I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to tell you why I disagree with it. Leaving a gun in a closed and locked car in a public parking lot, even if out of view, may cause the owner liability if the car is broken into and the gun taken and used in a crime. And here's why I disagree with this. I have searched over and over and over for case law where an individual's locked car was broken into, the gun was stolen and used in a crime, and the owner of the car and the gun was sued or criminally charged. It has never happened. I've never found a case. Furthermore, with a lot of states going to the New Castle Doctrine, the car is considered an extension of your home. So you would be no more liable for somebody breaking into your car and stealing your gun than if they did it to your home. You still wouldn't be liable. Go ahead and go to the next slide. When drawing and reholstering a pistol, care must be taken to ensure that clothing or other objects do not catch on the pistol and cause the pistol to be dropped or discharged. Drawing and reholstering an empty pistol must be practiced to develop the ability to do so safely, especially under a crisis situation. It cannot be stressed enough that using a pistol in self-defense must be considered as a last resort. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Body mechanics. Our body shape and size will place limitations on what holsters and clothing we can wear and properly conceal and safely draw our weapon. What works for me may not work for you. As a side note, females often have a higher waist than males, affecting the dynamics of drawing and concealing a gun. Now, that being said about all of that, some years ago when I was about 130 pounds heavier than I am now, I was working for a little town in central Missouri, near the Lake of the Ozarks area, not so much central. And I was issued a Smith & Wesson, I believe it was a 4006 40 caliber semi-automatic, and I absolutely hated that gun. That gun would jam up all the time, and it was a brick. Let me tell you, it was heavy. Well, I was built, like I said, like a funnel. And that gun kept pulling my trousers down. One night, I pulled up alongside a house that was vacant. I looked over and I saw a young kid sitting on the front porch, and he had a Walmart bag up around his face, up around his mouth and his nose. And I hollered, "Hey, come here, I want to talk to you." He put that bag down and he had gold and purple paint wrapped around his lips. He started to walk towards me, and he got about halfway to the car, and bang, he took off running lickety-split. Well, I was a young rookie. Didn't matter I was overweight. I was going after him, and I was going to catch him, by golly. I jumped out of the car. I called out on my radio, on my walkie-talkie, my shoulder mic. I'd be in pursuit on foot of an individual that took off running from me. And I took off after him, and I was running, and he was getting ahead of me, let me tell you. Well, all of a sudden, my belt, my trousers, everything fell to my ankles, and I tripped and fell flat on my face right there in the middle of the street. The individual I was chasing turned around, looked back, saw me, and laughed so hard that he ran smack dab into a light pole and knocked himself out cold. I thought, well, this worked out pretty good. So I picked up my belt and secured all my items back over there, went over there, cuffed him up, called for an ambulance. They said they'd meet us at the station, put him in the car he was coming to, took him into the police station. He was like, what happened? What happened? My police chief that was in there late that night was doing some paperwork. He said, well, who you got there? I said, well, this is the fellow I was chasing. He said, you caught him? You caught him? Anyway, long story short, my body was not designed to carry that heavy Smith & Wesson semi-automatic. Of course, since then, they've come up with some law enforcement suspenders, and I used them for a little while until I lost a lot of weight. But keep in mind, whatever holster you decide to use, make sure it doesn't print. Make sure it doesn't pull your pants down or your side of your pants down. Get something that's very comfortable, easy to utilize, easy to draw from, and inconspicuous. Go ahead and go to the next slide. You must practice drawing and reholstering safely to build muscle memory. Again, consider your clothing, snagging, discharging. Consider your body type, sitting and standing position when drawing. Especially a lot of you fellows will be carrying inside a vehicle. You'll be driving. Consider the type of holster, the position, the retention device. Consider your holster versus a non-traditional carry device if you decide to go that route. Where are you going to keep your extra ammunition? Are you going to utilize speed loaders, an extra magazine, clip to the belt, just loose rounds if you're carrying a revolver in your pocket? I've done that. Whatever you do, practice with that extra ammunition and getting it out quickly, especially under a stressful situation. Go to the next slide. We're going to talk about stress responses. Our bodies have been adapted over the centuries to respond to perceived danger with the flight or fight response, which is made up of both physiological and psychological components. Some people do have a third reaction, and that is to freeze. Go to your next slide. When subjected to a sudden stress crisis, our bodies go into survival mode, and the following occur to differing degrees in everyone. Pain receptors are turned down. Some people get shot and they don't even know it. Respiration and heart rate increases. Blood going to large muscle groups means less for small ones, which control hand-eye coordination. Our body starts to sweat to cool itself from the increased demands on its system. Proceed to the next slide. Your ability to speak in a normal tone of voice may be effective. You may become nauseated and even get cramps. Your eyes may water excessively, blurring your vision. Sensory distortion may take place, making it difficult to distinguish colors, distance, and judge time. Your startle response will be exacerbated, making it very important not to put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to fire. People have accidentally fired their pistol because they had their finger on the trigger and they had a startle response. You may get tunnel vision with your eyes focusing in on a very small part of the overall scene to the exclusion of other possible targets or dangers. This happened to me many years ago. I was running across the street in a low-ready position. In a stressful situation, I got tunnel vision and stepped out in front of a truck. You've got to be careful. Scan side to side. We'll talk about that a little later. Auditory distortion occurs, and you may not hear normal sounds or may hear sounds that don't help you, such as your pulse beating in your ears. Your brain can be so busy taking in input and spewing out responses that the higher brain functions are affected, including judgment and concentration. Your decisions can be less likely to be appropriate to the changing crisis situation. And of course, here's a big one. There's often a denial effect that this has actually happened. That is a very big one. That's happened to me on one occasion as well. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Dealing with stress response. Many of these stress responses are advantageous to our survival, and there's no way we'd want to offset them. Others we can train to overcome. To overcome tunnel vision, as I said before, you can train yourself to scan from side to side. You must train your muscles to handle your firearm through repetitive practice. This builds muscle memory that will be there when you need it and have lessened fine motor skills. You can also visualize, or what I call what-if train. Now, what-if training is basically anytime you go into a public building. Let's give a restaurant as an example. You go in, you want to find a tactical position to seat yourself. Somewhere where your back is to a wall, where you can observe the main entrance, possibly the exit, maybe even part of the kitchen. And you began to question yourself, what would I do if this person came in with this weapon and did this? What would I do if that fella over there, sitting there, all of a sudden jumped up, pulled a gun out of his waistband, and approached the clerk? Come up with all sorts of different scenarios in your mind. What would you do with your family if they were there with you? Would you direct them toward that exit you're sitting by? That's all what-if training. The point to this is should the day come when something similar to one of your scenarios begins to happen, you won't have to sit there and think about what you'll do. That training may automatically kick in. You can draw from that mental library and go into action. That is the principle behind what-if training. Go ahead and go to the next slide. In order to utilize deadly force in a legally defensible manner, you must be able to identify that an immediate life-threatening threat has existed and does exist that requires your justifiable use of deadly force. Since most shootings happen in low-light situations, you should and must have a flashlight available. Go on to the next slide. Here you see several examples of different types of flashlights that you can buy. Some of these are relatively inexpensive, a buck or two at a dollar store. Some of them are very expensive. I recently saw a flashlight that was selling for over $400. Now, if I've got $400 to spend on a flashlight, I'm probably going to buy a pistol first and get a flashlight later, at least one that expensive later. I've got plenty of flashlights. I'm sitting at my desk right now, and I have six of them batteried up and ready to go. So always have a flashlight available and ready. You're going to need one, especially in a home defense situation. And if you're going somewhere late at night, you need to cross a parking lot, it's always good to have at least some sort of pocket flashlight with you. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Now we're going to talk about safety and storage in the home. Go to the next slide. Safe gun storage is an integral part of gun safety. It is one of the prime responsibilities as a gun owner to take all responsible precautions to prevent unauthorized persons from having access to your firearms. By storing your firearms safely, you do not only avoid the possibility of an accidental shooting involving a child or other untrained person, but you also prevent a criminal from using your firearm against an innocent person, including members of your own family. Some jurisdictions have laws mandating secure firearm storage. Almost all jurisdictions have criminal negligence laws that can be applied to gun owners who do not take reasonable precautions in storing their firearms. You must consider all of this as well as the following for safe storage and safety. Go on to the next slide. Every household member in your home or in a home with guns should be trained in gun safety, even if they will never intentionally have access to the gun. Even small children must be trained. They should be trained in the NRA Eddie Eagle program, which teaches children to stop, don't touch, and tell an adult. While you may be a responsible gun owner, are all the visitors to your home? What about people whom your children visit? All firearms in the home should be rendered safe by locking devices or locked up in a suitable secure site away from unauthorized persons and children when not under physical control of the owner. A lock should never be placed on a loaded firearm. Go to the next slide. An unsecured hiding place is not secure. They can be stumbled onto by accident by children or unauthorized adults, regardless of how well hidden you believe them to be. Gun accidents are entirely preventable. When evaluating what firearm, if any, to keep in the home, you must give consideration to the environment. Will your bullets penetrate your walls and strike a neighbor? Most bullets will penetrate most non-brick walls and pose a risk to other dwellings and persons. Move on to the next slide. Unlike in TV land, you are responsible for every bullet fired, even during a justified shooting. A miss or misses can harm others not involved in the incident, such as neighbors or your family located in other parts of the house or even adjacent dwellings. In any potential crisis situation, you should call the police as soon as it's safe to do so. When possible, you should call before taking any action. A flashlight is a necessary part of any home safety plan. You must be able to see in order to assess if you need to shoot or not shoot. Many potential home defense situations will occur at night. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. Here you see some different kinds of safety devices. Quite frankly, I don't care for hardly any of them. The only ones I like are the ones that are battery AC operated, possibly with a battery backup, the kind that have a simple 4-digit code. A little more expensive are the biometric that require a thumbprint. I like those. They're easy to operate. You can operate them under a high-stress situation. The kind that require you to turn a dial, I like a combination lock, or get a tiny hole and a tiny keyhole. I don't care for those. I especially don't care for the kind that run a loop through the magazine well of a semi-automatic. But that's just my personal preference. Go ahead and move on to the next slide. Here you see an example of the integral locking device on a Taurus. These are good for storage. If you got your gun loaded and you want to lock it like this, keep it up on the shelf during the daytime, that's fine. I don't recommend you keep these locked up like this at night. Find another alternative method, whatever works for you, to secure that pistol. At night, in a high-stress situation, somebody's in your home, you don't want to turn on the light. You don't want to illuminate yourself as a potential target. And if you're in the dark, you're going to have a fun time trying to get that tiny little key and that tiny little keyhole under a stressful situation. Go ahead and move on to the next slide. Cover and concealment. During a violent encounter in your home or other locations, you'll need to be aware of cover and concealment. Cover is anything that will protect all or part of your body from incoming fire. A brick wall might be good cover. Concealment is anything that will hide all or part of your body from the observation of a potential attacker. Good concealment might be a big bush in a restaurant or a waiting room at a hospital. As far as cover goes, there's one item in almost everybody's home that makes pretty decent cover depending on the round, and that is your refrigerator. As a police officer, I was in a home several years ago, leaned up against the refrigerator while I was talking to an individual and saw 338 slugs embedded into the refrigerator. The individual said that I didn't want to know, and he was right. I didn't. But it showed me right then and there that a refrigerator is possibly good cover. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Okay, now we're going to talk about care and cleaning of concealable firearms. Go to the next slide, and here you see an example. This is a pretty nice kit, gun cleaning kit. And here you see in it the brushes and the lubricant and the solvent and some patches and some rods that are contained in these kits. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Concealable pistols can be cleaned in the same manner as non-concealed firearms by following the manufacturer's recommendations for that specific pistol. Concealed pistols will require more frequent cleanings due to the conditions of their carry. Sweat, lint, dust, dirt, small loose objects which might obstruct the barrel or action must be removed frequently to keep the pistol in a safe working condition. A holster that covers the barrel opening at the muzzle will minimize dangerous debris getting into the barrel and causing a dangerous obstruction. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Pistols should be cleaned after every use to ensure that it continues to operate properly and protect its finish and value. Pistols stored for extended periods of time should be cleaned to ensure that they operate correctly before being fired. Repairs should only be performed by a competent gun repair expert. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Again, the materials for cleaning of the concealed pistols, as was in the kit while ago, cloth patches, cleaning rods, cleaning rod attachments, soft cloths, brushes, gun cleaning fluid, solvent, gun oil, and material should be sized for the specific pistol. Don't buy a shotgun kit to clean your 9mm pistol. Go on to the next slide. Before cleaning any pistol, keep it pointed in a safe direction and check to make sure it's unloaded and the action open. No ammunition should be present when you're cleaning the pistol. Attach a bore brush of a suitable size to a cleaning rod and dip or spray the cleaner on the brush. Run the brush through the bore 8 to 10 times. Clean from the rear of the barrel whenever possible to reduce muzzle wear. Be careful not to damage the muzzle. Clean the revolver chambers in the same manner. Go on to the next slide. Attach a patch tip to the cleaning rod, put cleaner on it, and run it through the bore several times and the cylinders on the revolver. Attach a clean dry patch to the rod tip and run it through the bore and the cylinders on the revolver. Repeat this process until the dry cloth comes out clean. When the bore is clean, run a lightly oiled clean patch through the bore and the chambers if you're cleaning a revolver. Use a small brush to clean the extractor and the area around the rear face of the cylinder on a revolver. Brushes should not be used on the exterior finish of pistols. A cleaning cloth with cleaner should clean the powder residue from the outside finish. Go ahead and go to the next slide. When you're done, wipe down the pistol with a soft, clean cloth. Never use stainless steel polishing cloths or cleaners on blued pistols, as it will remove the finish. These are the general instructions. You should follow exactly the cleaning method specified by your pistol manufacturer. Lubricate the handgun following your specific manufacturer's instruction. Function check the handgun, dry fire it, and listen to see if it sounds normal. Observe it to see if it functions normally. Follow checks recommended for your specific handgun. Again, these are the general instructions. You should follow exactly the cleaning method prescribed and specified by your pistol manufacturer. Go to the next slide. Again, the fundamental gun safety rules. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it. Never point a gun at anything you're not willing to kill or destroy. The next slide. There's other safety rules. Be sure the gun is safe to operate. Know how to use the gun safely. Use only the correct ammunition for the gun. Know the target and what is beyond. Always wear eye and ear protection. Never use alcohol or drugs before shooting. Store your guns so they're not accessible to unauthorized persons. Be aware that certain types of guns and many shooting activities require additional safety precautions. This has been the Firearms Fundamental and Safety Training for Concealed Advantage Online. My name is Jason Kurtman. You can proceed on to the videos and the following steps. When you've completed your testing, give me a little time and I will get your certificate and your results back to you. Thank you for taking this course. If you have any questions, you can call me at 573-421-5386 or 575-479-7120, and I'll be glad to do whatever I can to help you out. Thanks again, and stay safe.